Trading Hemp for Hitler by Ryan Fletcher, as read by Christopher Cantwell, a 481 Designs publication. Only psychos and shamans create their own reality. Terrence McKenna. Introduction. A slave is one who is not even honest with himself. A revolutionary, albeit a repressed revolutionary, who is aware of a hostile environment, has established a working rapport with himself between his instincts and his intellect. James Mason, Siege 9.32, Indecent Liberties, page 481 of the Iron March 2nd edition. I am a white cisgender male born from the Australian secular middle class. My parents, themselves having been raised in the rural working class of white Australia, were qualified secondary school teachers working in the public school system. The eldest of four boys, I grew up in regional Victoria, around majority white communities. My teen years were fueled by a combination of tabloid media, antichrist superstar pop culture, and a slew of anticonvulsant medications prescribed for my epilepsy diagnosis. Prone to acting out throughout my youth, I was kicked out of the public high school for having 2 grams of cannabis in my locker, to which I was transferred to an ecumenical Christian coeducational low-cost secondary school as a result. As a student, I was somewhat rebellious and attracted to the creative areas of the curriculum, such as art, English, theater, and music. Although often characterized as a polite, well-natured individual, it wasn't uncommon for me to present as an incorrigible, wayward wignut. Once a functionally physiocratic agent of the British Empire and dedicated Chabos Goy with an honorary doctorate of philosophy from Sequoia University, I'm now a pan-Aryan zealot, praising Keck 5 times per day while studying for my doctorate in Zionology from Pole University. Trained as a graphic artist, like many pronounced fascist pamphleteers, I seek to subdue the Semite subversion that suppresses the sacred duty of the state to protect the nation and the integrity of the race more broadly. Trading Hemp for Hitler summarizes my transition from reactive psychonaut to Christian hempster to fermenter of fascism. Hail victory! Chapter 1, Reactive Ryan. Growing up, I didn't have a close association with organized religion. My father had offered up the humor of Monty Python as the tongue-in-cheek gospel for understanding life, which paternally programmed me to being nihilist from an early age. It wasn't until age 21 that I engaged with a religious organization. In early 2008, following the Project Chanology protest by Anonymous, I visited the Church of Scientology of Melbourne, then based in Russell Street near St. Paul's Cathedral. Briefly, for a month or so, I immersed myself in L. Ron Hubbard's seminal Bolt from the Blue, Dianetics, the Modern Science of Mental Health, completing a basic book course offered by the organization. At the time, I was living 3.5 hours away by train, visiting the Melbourne org at least 3 days a week. Familiarizing myself with the basics of Hubbard's applied religious philosophy, I came to understand the trichotomy of mind, body, and spirit, aka Thetan. Digestible concepts such as the dynamics, understanding one's relationship to the self, family, groups, and mankind, and the reactive mind, the portions of the mind that directs the body by stimulus response and thinks only in terms of identities, provided me a process by which to filter objective reality in relation to my thoughts. Scientology's foundational belief in survival resonated with me, particularly when I discovered Hubbard's canonical writings had been engraved on stainless steel tablets encased in titanium underground capsules preserved behind fences in deep vaults guarded by tight security at Trementina Base, New Mexico. The doctrine of Scientology thus will likely outlast all human life on Earth at this point. Disseminated the film Psychiatry, an Industry of Death, I became more entrenched in my distrust for the controlling methods relied upon by the system. Having been placed on several anticonvulsant and antipsychotic medications in conjunction with a primary medication for the treatment of epilepsy and epileptic psychosis, cynicism began to infect my perception towards treatment. Familiarizing myself with books by Thomas Sasse, an ethnically Jewish academic psychiatrist and psychoanalyst who co-founded the Citizens Commission on Human Rights, CCHR, with the Church of Scientology, I came to view psychiatrists as being system-centric merchants of chaos, who in conjunction with the pharmaceutical industry sought to manufacture Manchurian Candidate-style spree shooters for the dissolution of individual liberty. Scientology, in my estimation, is to the private sector what the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency's Stargate project was to the public sector. Operations and intended to construct conduits of influence with psychic scouts. Having completed a diploma in graphic arts 2 years prior, I was fascinated by the Church of Scientology's fierce advertising and public relations output, which mirrored the Edward Bernays axiom of rinse and repeat dissemination with an always attack, never defend attitude. The affinity for certain psych-out psyops that utilize digital techniques to overload, scramble, confuse, and unfocus your mind, to quote a line from Dr. Timothy Leary, convinced me at the time they were a vanguard order against the malicious operations of psychiatry in the popular culture. Scientology provided me insight to the truism of life being a game of struggle and that the way to transcend its tussles is to find fun in the fight and persist against all odds. Hence, when it comes to the manipulation of monopolized mental health, it stands to reason that when system-compliant sanity is civilization suicide, one must affirm the archetypal Aryan aura of embattled adventurer to survive. Chapter 2, Pilgrim to Pothead. In mid-2008, after completing a nationally accredited qualification in youth work, I began working for Uniting Care Cutting Edge, a social justice organization affiliated with the Uniting Church of Australia. Working for United Care, whose outreach encompassed refugee resettlement and LGBTIQA plus well-being support, would later come to harden my evolving views toward the area of third world immigration and Rainbow Coalition subversion. In 2009, I attended the National Christian Youth Convention, where I engaged in a week-long conference of fellowship with other passionate young people. I was fortunate enough to meet one of the guest speakers, an American author and monastic Christian activist by the name of Shane Claiborne, a radical altruist who'd served alongside Mother Teresa and carried out peace work in Baghdad during the Iraq War. The conference imbued me with a great sense of uplift that drove me to engage closer with the church. On Sunday, the 19th of April, 2009, I was baptized in the Goulburn Valley River, Shepparton. Later that year, I went on a faith and cultural exchange to the Philippines. Arriving at Ninoy Aquino International Airport, the trio of travelers to which I was a part were bused to the Shalom Center in Metro Manila, where we were briefed on the country we were soon to experience firsthand. From what I could understand, the Philippines ostensibly had two governments. In the north was the American-backed regime of President Gloria Arroyo, a former economics professor who schooled her successor, Benigno Aquino III, and in the south, a de facto government led by the Communist Party of the Philippines, whose leader was Jose Maria Sison, was living in exile. Under the Arroyo regime, the Philippines had a population of roughly 92.22 million people, the majority of which lived in austere poverty. At the time, it amazed me that a nation like the Philippines, which is a little larger than the state of Victoria, had more than four times the population of my geographically vast nation of Australia, whose population was 21.69 million at the time. Staying at a manse in a Manila suburb for the first couple of days, we toured the vibrant existence of the capital via everything from jeepneys, train track taxis, to tracicabs, or pedicab sidecars. Witnessing the extreme destitution of Smoky Mountain 2, a community established on an active rubbish tip in Tondo, to the historic grandeur of Intramuros, aka the Walled City, I was overwhelmed by the country. In the week ahead, the three of us split up to venture off into different regions of the Philippines, although Mindanao in the south was naturally a no-go zone. I ventured further north, where I'd stay in a beautiful remote mountain community called Camp Martyr in Bongabon, Nueva Ecija, spending the night drinking San Miguel rum with the men of the community as they chewed betel nut. In the days ahead, I'd venture into surrounding rural farmlands in the vicinity of Cabanatuan City, where I rode a carabao, water buffalo, bareback in the rice fields. Upon returning to Manila, I spent the last days of the trip reflecting in a disassociative state as I drank flaming shots and sampled the local green, which had a lot of stem and seed in it. Having dined on cuisine ranging from jalebi to exotic dishes like adobo aso, dog stewed in vinegar, garlic, soy sauce, bay leaves, and peppercorns, and balut, a duck embryo boiled and eaten from the shell, I praise God for having blessed me with the experience. While some today would cast me as a xenophobic pariah who hates everything that doesn't fall in the territory of the Anglosphere, this exposure trip to the Philippines remains one of the most providential events in my life to date. When I returned to Australia, I began taking long introspective sessions fueled by marijuana, psilocybin cubensis, and Jack Harris' book, The Emperor Wears No Clothes. Chapter 3, Hemp for Victory. My conversion to the cannabis culture came about around 2009 when becoming aware of the activities of the Canadian-based activist and entrepreneur Mark Emery, a.k.a. the Prince of Pot. Emery, an ardent admirer of Ayn Rand and long-standing libertarian, considered himself to be a Howard Roark-style archetype raging against the system. His activities encompassed both party-based political efforts as well as agorist-style action. To this day, one of my cherished possessions from that period of my life is an autographed copy of Emery's magazine, Cannabis Culture, issue 57, October to November 2005. Having been uprooted from high school years earlier for having been found in possession of 2 grams of cannabis and having a medical condition, epilepsy, which was deemed to be treatable with cannabidiol, the defiant doctrine espoused by Emery spoke to me. In the lead-up to the 2013 federal election, I exerted myself into the Help End Marijuana Prohibition, or Hemp Party, by establishing its Shepparton branch and running second place on the Senate ballot paper to Victorian Hemp Party President Matt Riley. During this period, I courted media attention and networked with activists, patients, and people in the general public about the issues surrounding cannabis legalization, namely the economic, social, and political benefits. As a result of the minor party preferences harvesting agreement undertaken by political strategist Glenn Drury, 15,036 of our 20,082 votes, or 74.87%, went towards getting Australian Motoring Enthusiast Party candidate Ricky Muir elected, AMEP having received 17,122 votes in Victoria during the election. Following the 2013 election, the Victorian Hemp Party leadership fractured away from the federal executive and reformed into the Free Cannabis Party, or FCP, which I was instrumental in facilitating. During the 2014 Victorian state election, thanks in part to our modest campaigning, both Liberal and Labor supported access to medical marijuana. My migration away from the marijuana movement came about after analyzing some of the international figures who were fermenting and financing certain ganja green color revolutions that profited oligarchical interests. Soros lieutenants like Ethan Nadelman, the ethnically Jewish executive director of the Drug Policy Alliance, oversaw the mass protests in Uruguay, which maneuvered Monsanto marijuana into the regulated South American market under Jose Mujica's regime. Vice News, which is now presently syndicated on Australian television via the Special Broadcasting Service, were one of the chief media outlets who provided extensive support to both Mujica and continues to provide favorable support for George Soros. While I still support the principle of cannabis legalization, I've come to realize that its heightening of hedonic hotspots, among other means, were/are being used by alien antagonists to amplify anarchy and abstraction against homogenous institutions of authority for their own enrichment. Chapter 4, Nazi Time. As a white male growing up in the postmodern Western world, my dyed-in-the-wool Aryan oppositional defiance disorder toward Talmudic anti-axis aversion therapy became more pronounced as Bolshevik batshit insanity increased. My father had received his higher education via Duntroon Royal Military College and had completed his thesis on the subject of the Third Reich, accumulating an extensive library pertaining to the topic of National Socialism. Even though Dad was a big-brain Beatles-loving admirer of Nelson Mandela, the notion of hailing the hook and croy wasn't exactly something that offended my sensibilities. If anything, religiously watching VHS copies of The World at War, a 1970s British television series chronicling World War II, complemented my affinity for shock rock, horror punk, and industrial metal music. A natural-born shit-stirrer at school, I wasn't shy about flashing the Roman salute to trigger some reactions. A long-standing admirer of the political theatrics of George Lincoln Rockwell, founder of the American Nazi Party and son of George Lovejoy Doc Rockwell, I spent much of my high school years perfecting the persona of rabble-rouser among my classmates. The coverage of One Nation Party meetings in 1997, which showed violent mobs of left-wing criminals bashing and egging elderly Australians while simultaneously hurling death threats at Pauline Hanson herself, was a lasting memory that amplified my disgust for Australia's radical left and remains seared into my psyche to this day. In 2005, post-high school, while working for the Central Murray Informer and staying at the Bottom Pub in Cobram, I read John Pascarelli's book, The Pauline Hanson Story, by the man who knows. Pascarelli, an incisive political animal, provided me a blunt account to the machinations of what Tony Abbott referred to as the Feral Right, a.k.a. Australia's blue-collar right. Following an Australian League of Rights seminar on Saturday, the 6th of October, 2007, entitled Is the West Future? Immigration Forever in a Day, where I first heard Professor Andrew Fraser talk about immigration in a globalist utopia, my mind internalized the impending dynamics facing Australia in the coming decades. In mid-December of 2014, when Muslim cleric Manharan Manas waged an armed siege at the Lind Cafe, Martin Place, Sydney, I began to project outrage towards the state of affairs that had transpired on Australian shores. As the siege played out across the mainstream media, with the Black Standard flag of jihad being repetitiously shown on the television, I became incensed by insane narratives that intertwined with the coverage. Before the slain hostages had been given a moment of reflection, unsubstantiated allegations of an unidentified Muslim lady being coerced to remove her hijab were making the headlines. Though apparently refusing the offer of help from a lone feminist Green Party supporting witness who started the hashtag I'll ride with you, this microaggression was being held up by the media as a greater crime than the victims of Manas. The coordinated international circus that fomented this viral nonsense was what triggered me to become a zealous supporter of political action against radical Islamists and their neo-Marxist fellow travelers. By mid-2015, having been a regular contributor in varying social media circles, I started writing for the anti-cultural Marxist periodical XYZ, a polar opposite play on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's acronym ABC. Becoming the blog's second largest contributor, producing more than 350 food for thought articles/cartoons and 62 animated episodes of A Ryan Rant, I regularly produced content that railed against antithetical agitators who opposed the virtues of white Western civilization. An instantaneous convert of Trump's campaign for the presidency following Donald Trump's June 16th speech at Trump Tower, I became a zealous cheerleader for God Emperor's no-holds-barred rhetoric, which mirrored the style deployed by Pascarelli years earlier during the rise of Pauline Hanson's One Nation. Following a Friday night AFL match at the Melbourne Cricket Ground, where United Patriots Front raised a banner that read, Go Pies, Stop the Moss, on Sunday, April 3rd, 2016, I featured as the mass media's If It Bleeds, It Leads story, after Black Bloc Communists attacked me at an anti-Halal rally at the Melbourne Showground, Epsom Road, Ascot Vale. Receiving a knock to the head with an iron pipe, a bloodied face, and a first-class trip to hospital in an ambulance, the engramic incident re-stimulated the scenes of violence at One Nation Party meetings years earlier in my mind, which naturally reinforced my repulsion of the system's anti-white new left foot soldiers. Following the Trump victory and the rising outbreak of the Black Bloc communist action in America, I unflinchingly shifted further rightward by wholeheartedly embracing, defending, and supporting various alt-right factions that manifested at the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville, Virginia. Working nights, producing pro-white media, and acquainting myself with siege-pilled compatriots in the local area, comm lines began to shift away from the public sphere to decentralized modes. Logically compelled to prioritize and act in accordance with the dynamics outlined in Hubbard's Bolt from the Blue, I'm now working to become self-sufficient in order to secure some degree of immunity from the cyclical era of chaos, or Kali Yuga, that will threaten white survival in the years ahead. The End. Ryan Fletcher is an Australian white nationalist who presently works as a freelance graphic artist and allied health worker in regional Victoria. Trading Hemp for Hitler is a booklet about a former functionally physiocratic agent of the British Empire and dedicated Chabos Goy with an honorary doctorate of philosophy from Sequoia University, turned pan-Aryan zealot praising Keck five times per day while studying for his doctorate in Zionology from Pole University. Christopher Cantwell is a professional voice artist and the host of The Radical Agenda, a live, uncensored, open phones, right-wing talk show which airs thrice weekly at ChristopherCantwell.com. To get your essay, book, pamphlet, or other text read aloud in this voice, please visit PennedAndPronounced.com.